Hey, Curiosity Builders, I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. If you could cast any spell, what would it do? For today's guest on Getting Work to Work, her spell would spread kindness. Holly Haddam is a New York Times bestselling illustrator, kid-lit author, fascinated with animation, imagination, nature, and magic. In this conversation, we talk about her obsession with unicorns and art, how she approaches her work, and how sensitivity is her superpower. She also shares the struggles she encounters when sharing work on social media. Most importantly, she explains how weird is a side effect of awesome. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/513. Well, Holly, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is so wonderful to talk with you today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I love to ask this question of everyone, and I'm particularly excited with you because based upon the work that I've seen that you've done, you are endlessly curious about everything. But if you were to describe it, what are you endlessly curious about?
Right at the moment, it's animation. Ooh. It's the next place that I want to go, and I've actually been getting there. I've worked with Disney this past year, and wow. I'm close. I sold a concept to an animation studio. So right now I just want to breathe and eat animation all day long.
That's amazing. And what's cool about that is when I went to your website, I saw Dear Girl and the animated swing and then the monster jumping out behind the girl reading. And I'm just like, that animation, even in its simplistic form, really captured my attention.
Thank you. It's just something I've been wanting to do since I was a little kid, waking up every Saturday and watching Beauty and the Beast and driving my parents crazy. Even as a high schooler, every Saturday I would sit down and watch that movie and dream of working with Disney one day.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I don't think for myself I got much better than Saturday morning cartoons either. Even to this day, I'm a huge animation fan as well. It's just like, whether it's 2D animation or 3D animation, I just love the possibilities of world building and telling just unbelievable stories in the animated form.
Me too. It's a combination of all the art forms that I love, like illustration and animation and music all together. It inspires me a lot.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think that you're inspired by is the pantheon of mythological creatures.
Yeah. Yes.
From dragons and unicorns to yetis and snow monsters. So if you could be, I'm going to start with a really just, you know, serious question here. If you could be any mythological creature, which one would you be?
Oh, well, everyone that knows me knows that it's a unicorn. I'm obsessed with them. I have unicorn stuff all over my office. And I wrote a book about unicorns just as an excuse to draw unicorns. So I really want to be one.
That's fantastic. I love that you came up with a project so that you could legitimize your desire to draw.
It's true. It was my excuse to just draw unicorns all day long.
That's awesome. What were people saying as you were drawing unicorns? Like, yep, makes sense.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's interesting because when I look at your work, it does make me feel just light, happy, and alive.
Thank you.
I'm curious what got you interested in illustration.
I've always been interested. My parents said that I was drawing from a really young age. So as far back as I can remember, I've always been drawing. I was a really avid reader. So I was always reading books and picture books. And it's always been my dream as a little girl to write and draw picture books.
Did you have heroes along the way that were like, yeah, this is actually possible?
My high school art teacher, I really believe if it wasn't for her, I don't know if I would have gone the art way, even though it was the biggest love in my life, my entire life. In grade 10, we were supposed to pick our electives for the next year. And I have no idea why that I decided to drop art and take Spanish. And I've always hated languages, always have, always will. So I still don't understand why to this day I wanted to do that. And my art teacher, she found out somehow, and she would not have it. She would not let me. She told me to go to the counselor's office that day and change that Spanish back to art. So I'm so grateful. I wish I could talk to her now just to say thank you, because I don't know where I would be if it wasn't for her.
I'm sure somewhere along the lines you would be drawing cartoons on the back of a napkin or something about in Spanish.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. It really goes to show the power of just that right voice at the right time, keeping you on track that they see for you.
Yeah. If you like teachers, they can have such an effect on your life.
Yeah. Positive and negative.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
So you had that teacher who kind of kept you on that path, but who were some of your heroes where you were just like admiring their work and taking in everything that they were doing?
I always loved Tim Burton. And I always loved Mary Blair.
Oh yeah.
And I have prints from both of them on my walls in my office, and they're still people I admire to this day. They're my top two big ones.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. Mary Blair and her work with like, It's a Small World is always that kind of iconic look of her style.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah.
So you've thrown out all these rich and amazing worlds, from unicorns and mythological creatures to inspired by Tim Burton and Mary Blair. Do you have favorite stories that you like to tell?
Myself as a storyteller, I like anything filled with magic. And I love to tell humorous stories. And I always like to write to share or teach kindness.
Well, that's refreshing. The world definitely needs some kindness right
kindness,
now.
Kindness, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So what does that look like in terms of, you know, capturing those stories? I mean, kindness is a very big theme. So what are some of those themes that you're really captured by yourself?
Well, I've been writing a wordless picture book about paying it forward, about how just one little tiny act can just have a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to tell that with just pictures and no words. Mm-hmm. So that's one way. And I try to do that. Like, one of my goals for 2021 was to do one act of kindness a day for a stranger, for someone I love. So that's always been a big part of who I am.
Oh, that's really neat. So what goes into the process of creating a wordless picture book about kindness and paying it forward? Where do you start with that?
I just try to think of things that in my life that when someone has shown me kindness and what that felt like. And kindness doesn't have to be this huge, just this big act of kindness. It can be something little as just paying a compliment or just paying for someone's coffee. So I was just trying to think of really tiny things, simple things that anybody, even kids, can do throughout the day. And I just made a list of those little simple things, and the illustrations just came from there.
Oh, that's neat. So when you're creating illustrations, do you start really sketchy and sloppy and kind of just like, you know, throwing ideas down as fast as you can? Or are you very methodical in your process?
I'm very methodical. Like, I'll read a manuscript and I make lots of notes of what I envision for each spread as I read it. And I'm always thinking about the emotion I'm feeling or I want to evoke. And that dictates the sketches.
Oh, that's neat. A lot of what my understanding of the artistic process is, you kind of have that that almost like either or, where you have that methodical approach or you have that kind of loose, sketchy, you know, just scribbling, getting it all down. And I love that you're coming at it from that methodical point of view.
Thank you. Well, I've always admired people that can do the thumbnails, the really sketchy thumbnails, because I don't do that at all.
Yeah. That is such an art form, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
One of the animation books that I read years ago was, they were looking at the kind of old style of almost like Looney Tunes, Chuck Jones style of animation, and that the whole line of action and how they could create in simple sketches the motion that they were going to do. And it always just boggled my mind. Yeah. It's like, how do you do that?
That's what I think every time I watch any sort of animation. It's just, I'm in awe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recently I watched the film Anastasia with my wife, I think it was the late 90s. And it was just amazing what they were able to do with the animation style.
I love that movie, yeah.
So very methodical. You kind of are thinking about the emotions, which makes sense because one of the parts of emotion is color and using color. And what I love about your style is that you have pieces where it's just so vibrant in the use of color. But then there's those few pieces where there's almost, you know, spot colors or no color at all. And is that part of the process as well of using color to tell the emotional story?
Very much. I spend a lot of time perfecting my color palettes, and it's always based on the emotion I want to evoke in the piece.
So it's almost like, it sounds like you start then with like color palettes.
It's always in the back of my mind, even during the sketch phase. I'm always aware of what I'm going to do with the color palette.
Oh, interesting. So are you like constantly collecting color palettes then?
Oh my goodness. I have like Pinterest boards full of color palettes. Or I create my own. I have an app on my phone where I just go around. I walk around, and if I see interesting colors pop, I'll just snap a photo and it creates a color palette from it.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. My mind is blown a little bit there. Yeah. It just goes to show how much you can find from the real world to bring into your world of fantasy.
Well, nature is my biggest inspiration, so I get a lot of my color palettes from there.
Do you have a favorite place that you like to go to throughout the year?
I have this beautiful forest right behind my house. I can just walk there, and I go there a lot.
Ooh. How many of your characters have lived there?
Probably all of them.
It'd be interesting to have you make a map of like all of the homes of your characters in the forest behind your house.
That would be a magical place to be.
Do you ever find yourself, I mean, this is a very personal question, but do you ever find yourself talking to your imaginary friends out there as you're wandering around?
Talking, no, but I do. Oh, that's not true, because I have a 7-year-old who likes to talk to his imaginary friends, and I've got him to believe, like, he really believes in fairies and magic, and he has a little fairy door in his room where he believes the fairies live. So when we go on a walk together, we're always spotting unicorns in the forest, and he's always talking to the character. So I feel like I am too when I'm with him.
Oh, that's really neat. Mm-hmm. Wow. What a rich imagination that you have and you're fostering in others. That's so cool.
It's just my addiction with magic. Or obsession.
I like both. Addiction, obsession, it both works. It is fascinating, though, as you start to describe your methodical process. In one of the websites that I found with your work on it, you mentioned that you combine line drawings with photography and texture. And so I'm curious, you've shared a little bit about the process, but can you walk me through, like, from start to finish, what you do?
It all begins with sketches, and I do everything digitally. I sketch in Photoshop, and then I'll bring that over into Illustrator. I vectorize everything. I have a huge collection of textures and patterns, and I collect the certain ones that I want to use for that piece, along with, at this point, I already have my color palettes that I'm going to use. So after Illustrator, with vectorizing everything and coloring it all in and using all my textures, I bring everything back into Photoshop. And that's when I start painting and layering and adding the shadows and the highlights and the little details.
Wow. I like that it's an all digital process, because there's so much that you can do. But I do have some Illustrator friends as well. And I'm always like asking them, when they're working digital, how do you bring those elements of the tactile world or the analog world into that digital process? And I'm curious how you do that as well. Is it just through texture?
Through texture and patterns.
And I imagine you're collecting brushes and creating all this unique stuff as well.
Yes, I have tons of brushes. I try to create my own too, but a lot of the time I just go searching for them.
Do you ever find stuff in the forest behind your house and bring it in to create like brushes and textures?
All the time.
Thank you for sharing about the process. It is really fascinating to think about what it takes to bring creativity to life. Because I think if you don't know the world and you only see the finished work, you have a lot of stories that you start telling about what that person is doing.
It's true.
Have you always had a fascination with process? Are you constantly refining it, or are you set and you know exactly what to do now?
No, I'm always trying to improve with each book that I do. Mm. I'm always reading or learning or just reading about other artists and the way they do things and analyzing a piece that I love and how did they do that and how did they do this. And every time I get one of my books in the mail, it's awful. Like I hate, like the first thing I do is nitpick and just go through everything and tear it apart. And I'm like, I should have done this differently and that differently, but I just make notes to just get better for the next book.
That's really interesting, because, you know, sometimes as creatives, we get stuck on what other people are saying, but you're telling me that you are, sounds like one of the biggest critics of your own work.
Yes, it's something I've been dealing. I feel like every artist, no matter how many books you've published, no matter how much praise you've gotten, you're always going to tear apart your own work. Mm. But I feel like it's good and bad. It's good if you do it in a good way, not with your awful, critical, mean voice, but just with your nicer, gentler, getting better voice.
Yeah.
Which I've tried to learn to do over the years.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. The nicer, kinder, gentler voice. What is so interesting about that is, like, do you pick one thing, or do you just like focus in on everything that could be improved? Or do you like, well, this time I'm going to focus on my color usage or the textures, or do you focus in on everything?
I focus on everything.
Interesting. So I imagine there's probably a lot of like notes and sticky notes on the finished products to bring the awareness.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming.
So how do you not get overwhelmed by that then?
Honestly, I just take it one day at a time. Like, and I always tell myself, I always improve and I always finish my work. Those are my two mantras whenever I'm stressed out about anything.
There's a lot of wisdom in that.
Thank you.
What I love about that is I think there is a sense of idealism when it comes to the creative life of, you know, one day you'll arrive at the pinnacle of your career. I'm more refreshed by what you're saying is always be improving, because then you don't have to worry about the stress of arriving.
Well, that, and I feel you'll get bored if you don't improve or keep learning.
Mm. So one of the interesting things on your website is a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt that says, "Do one thing every day that scares you." I absolutely love that quote, because I don't want to do one thing every day that scares me. So how does that enter into your mind as you're creating art and telling stories?
Well, creating art is scary. The blank page is scary. Sharing your art with the world is scary. So, and where my art comes like from deep in my heart, it's really personal, and I feel really exposed most of the time with my Instagram account because I try to be very real and genuine with what is happening in my life at that time. And that's usually where the piece is inspired by. And I care a lot about mental health, and I've shared stories and art describing my battle with anxiety throughout the years. But I do it because those pieces are the ones that really resonate with people. And if I can just make one person feel seen and not alone and not weird or something's wrong with them, then I've done my job and it was worth creating that scary piece of art.
Ooh, that's so rich. What was the hardest part about learning to share your work? Because I think for a lot of creatives, it's so easy sometimes to just create, but then there's that chasm between creating our art and sharing it with people.
It's always, you want people to love it. That's the scary thing. And with social media, you're obsessed about how many likes you have and how many comments you have. So it can actually, I feel like it can do a little more harm if you let it. You have to try to distance yourself from it. And the number of likes you get doesn't dictate how good of an artist you are. And I've had that problem throughout the years with Instagram. Like right now, my account is deactivated just because I've had some horrible interactions with people on there where they don't have boundaries. So I just needed a little breather from it.
That about sums up my relationship with social media too. I didn't deactivate, I deleted.
Oh, good. I'm close to doing that.
I commend you though for being willing to just be open about the personal nature of your work, because that's so hard.
Well, my art is really, it's cathartic to me. It's how I deal with a lot of stuff. And I know it's a lot of stuff others are dealing with. So I just feel like it's my duty to share it.
Are you thinking about the audience and the people you are creating art for in the moment? Or are you just so focused on the story at hand?
It depends which piece it is. If it's like my story that I want to tell, I'm thinking of my story, but then I think about how there's probably others that have a similar story. And then a lot of my art is trying to inspire people to be them and be sparkly and shine and do what they love and follow their dreams. That's a big theme in my art as well.
Well, sign me up. Yeah. I love it. That's what I want. I just think it's so great that you are an example to people, because I can only imagine if a kid picked up your book with that sort of message of dreams and kindness and magic, that you're creating in their mind a huge, rich world that is possible.
That makes my heart happy. You just saying that, just picturing kids reading my books and getting inspired by them. It's why I do what I do.
Yeah. Well, and even like 42-year-old kids who see your work, and it's like the inner child in me is just like, oh, remember what that was like, running through the forest with a snow monster?
Well, mentally, I always tell people mentally, I still feel like a teenager. So that's where that comes from.
That's fantastic. Love that so much. One of the things that really just, there was a moment where I was reading your about page, and like your ability to, not even with pictures, but with words, express your creative self. It was so wonderful. And
that means a lot.
There was a phrase that you said, weird is a side effect of awesome. And I'm just like, thank you very much, Holly. Thank you. And what does that mean
to
you?
That's my favorite quote. Well, I've always felt weird, and I don't think of it as a bad thing. Like, I hate the word normal. I don't want to be normal. That's scary to me. Mm-hmm. To me, weird means embracing your quirks and letting it make you awesome and letting it make you shine and just embracing it. It's your uniqueness. Why do you want to be like anybody else? So just take that quirk and run with it.
What's the one quirk that you're glad that you picked up and ran with, apart from scissors?
Oh my goodness, me. I am like a 41-year-old obsessed with unicorns and Harry Potter. I have a Harry Potter wand on my desk and I have Harry Potter Lego. I'm obsessed with Lego. Like I have Lego. Ooh. I don't allow my 7-year-old to play with. Like that's my Lego. You can't.
Of course it is.
So those are my quirks. And like another quirk or something that I thought used to make me feel so different was my sensitivity. People would always tell, you're too sensitive. You got to toughen up. And I always thought it was something I needed to change about myself, but I've come to realize that that is my superpower. And that's what makes me relatable to others. And it makes my art have emotion. So that's something that I have embraced.
Oh, that's amazing. And I too am obsessed with Harry Potter Lego.
Really?
Oh yeah. My wife and I, we will get different builds. And so the latest release is where they had like the Burrow, and then we got the Burrow, we got like the Knight's Bus and the Room of Requirement. I mean, it's been a blast just putting those together last year.
Have you seen the books that they have?
Yes.
Yeah. My wife is obsessed. I just got one last weekend.
That's so cool. My wife is obsessed with this British YouTuber who builds all the Lego stuff and shares them.
That's awesome.
So I'll come out after working for a little bit. She'll be like, check this out. And it's like a review of one of the books. It's so fascinating.
Oh, so nice to have a fellow Harry Potter Lego nerd.
Oh my gosh. I would say that I am one, but my wife is like, I'm sure you and her could like talk forever about Lego because she is utterly obsessed with Lego.
That's amazing.
Speaking of amazing, you call yourself a proud tree hugger, and I'm curious what your favorite tree to hug is.
Oh, that's just mean. I love all the trees. I think I love oak trees just because they're so big. It's just more tree to hug.
Fantastic. I remember hugging a Joshua tree as a kid, and that did not feel good. Oh, no. I was running through a field and I misjudged the distance between myself and the leaves, and I think it poked me in the eye. No. It did not feel good.
Oh no. We don't have Joshua trees here, so I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't have, we were on vacation too, so that only made it worse.
Whereas
now I live in the Pacific Northwest, so we're in the land of trees up here.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah. I'm sure it's raining right now, if I'm to be honest.
Better than snow.
Yes, we had a bunch of snow recently, and it was just not as enjoyable as it was probably for other people.
No, being a Canadian, yeah.
Exactly. I'm starting to understand snowbirds even more now. Going south for the winter.
Yeah, I wish I could do that.
So one thing that I'm really curious about is, do you have like books planned out for, you know, the time being, or is it more of like you get an idea, you put a proposal together, and it'll be like, and then you start working on it? How does that work?
I have notebooks and notebooks full of ideas. And whenever I find myself with any spare time, I'll just go through the notebooks and pick an idea that I am drawn to in that moment.
I love that. And when you're curating these notebooks, like, what's in it? Is it like a scrapbook of things, or is it just words or sketches?
It's both. It's a lot of my ideas start with a character. Mm-hmm. So I'll just have sketches of characters in there, or a lot of it is a line, like a one-liner for the first page of the book that I just pops into my head, and that's it. And that will spur an entire concept for a book. So it's a mix of stuff.
Well, if you could collaborate with any artist living or dead, who would it be?
That's hard. Mary Blair is one. And alive, I love Oliver Jeffers.
The name sounds really familiar, but I'm not picturing the work.
How to Catch a Star. That's his very first book. He's well, or have you heard of Stuck? That's my favorite that he's done.
It sounds like it's in my alley of...
It's a funny, like his books are really funny and clever.
Is funny and clever something that you're identifying with in that collaboration?
Yeah, I love to make kids laugh, and you know, I love a good toilet joke still. So
that's fantastic. Thank you for admitting that. I appreciate that. Because I don't know if you realize this, but through this entire interview, like, I feel normalized through this conversation in like a positive way. Like, I feel like I can be weird in my authentic self and just nerd out on all of these things. And I really appreciate that.
That is the best compliment ever. Aw.
Well, as we wrap things up, Holly, what book, podcast, or resource is blowing your mind right now?
I am obsessed with Natalie Lloyd. She's a children's book writer. She writes chapter books. And one of my favorite books of all time is called A Snicker of Magic.
Ooh.
So if you can read it, go read it. It's just full of magic and inspiration and just joy. I love it so much.
Well, final question for you. If you could cast any spell right now, what would it do?
Instantly spread kindness around the entire world.
Well said. Well, Holly, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. This was a lot of fun.
It was. Thank you.
As we talked about in this episode, I really love the quote that Holly had on her website from Eleanor Roosevelt: "Do one thing every day that scares you." And I want to ask you this question: what's the one thing you'll do today that scares you? What are you waiting for? Go do it. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.